Going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 373 and 838. Mr. Secretary, we will begin with you if you don't mind taking the table.
No, don't mind at all.
Secretary of State Bill Bradbury, appreciate you coming to the committee very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for already introducing me, but for the record, Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State. I'm here today both as the Oregon Secretary of State, but also as the chair of the Oregon Sustainability Board. The Sustainability Board has a very diverse membership, and the range of that membership ranges from John Ledger of Associated Oregon Industries to Eric Schooler, who is the CEO of Collins Pines, to Tracy Liske, who's a farmer on the Klamath Irrigation District, to Sarah Vickerman, who is very involved with Defenders of Wildlife. So it's a very diverse group of 11 folks. And the Sustainability Board has been very supportive of renewable energy development and the environmental and economic opportunities that that energy development provides for this state. And I have to just say that I personally am very excited about Senate Bill 373, creating a renewable energy portfolio standard. And the reason I get so excited about creating a portfolio standard is because it's very clear that a portfolio standard creates a market for renewable power. And it's very clear that once a market is created, capital investment follows that market. So if you want to bring capital investment to renewable energy development in Oregon, the best way that I know of to do that is to create a renewable portfolio standard that guarantees a market for renewable energy. Now, renewable energy development in this state is what I would call a win-win-win-win. Obviously, it's a win because it reduces global warming pollution. Obviously, it's a win because it reduces our dependence on foreign oil. And I think all of us recognize that that's not really a great place to be if you can find a way to reduce your dependence on unstable sources of energy. You're a lot better off. Third win is it provides new economic development opportunities, particularly for rural Oregon. And fourth, it creates high-tech, value-added jobs, and some of them are in rural areas. Many of them are in urban areas. So those are the four wins that you get from renewable energy development. And I think the best example of creating new jobs is the recent announcement of Solar World locating in Washington County, 300 jobs creating solar silicon wafer and solar cell technology. I mean, that's just, we couldn't really hope for something better. One would expect smaller companies and development of smaller companies, but to get a 300 manufacturing jobs producing solar energy, huge win. I want to talk for a minute about wind energy. I can remember when I was first running for a state representative from the South Coast in 1980. I talked a lot about renewable energy development, and I can still remember the radio ad I did that talked about how the wind always blows in Port Orford.
He was there, or because
what was that?
No, that's Mr. Secretary.
But the thing that's so remarkable about wind energy is it really has a very unique benefit. It generates electricity at a predictable and a stable price for a 20-year period, which is the general life of a wind turbine. And really, when you think about it, once you buy a wind turbine and install it, you're not buying the wind on a daily basis. There's no charge for that wind. So your costs are very fixed over a 20-year period. And compare it to other fuels like natural gas, and I'm not picking on natural gas, but just compare it to natural gas. You obviously have to build the natural gas plant to begin with, just like you have to build a wind turbine. But then you have to keep purchasing the gas. And we know that there are a lot of fluctuations in the price of gas, and generally fossil fuels generally are going to be costing more over time. We all recognize that. And wind doesn't have, and once you make the installation, you're golden for 20 years. There's another energy source, renewable energy source, that I'm personally very excited about because I come from the coast of Oregon. And that is wave energy, which there's really the center of technology development on wave energy is really Oregon State University. And they're about to site some, I guess you'd call them pilot or test projects down near Reedsport in Gardner. And it's real clear that once they figure this technology out, you know, I've watched the ocean for a number of years, and it just keeps rocking. And I think it's really an incredible opportunity, and I think it's an opportunity for this state to be a real leader in wave energy. And just to close the loop here, it's real clear that investments in wave energy are significantly assisted by the adoption of a renewable portfolio standard like that contained in Senate Bill 373. So, as you can tell, I am a very enthusiastic supporter of Senate Bill 373. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions if whatever you want to do.
I think we've got an ambitious agenda today, so right. We will let you off the hook on that, but
okay.
We're very grateful for you being here. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Pleasure.
And while the Secretary is making his way down, I need to step outside the committee, and so I will leave the chair in the able hands of Senator Atkinson.
Next, we'd like to call up Representative Ben Cannon.
Thank you very much, Chair Atkinson and members of the committee. I'm Ben Cannon. I represent District 46 in our State House of Representatives. That's parts of southeast and northeast Portland. I thought very carefully before coming over to testify today. I serve on the Energy and Environment Committee in the House of Representatives. I hope that we get that bill from you soon, and I was reluctant to sort of prejudice the outcome of that deliberation, and did put a lot of thought before deciding whether to come over here and put my support for this bill on the record. I decided to do so for several reasons. The first is that I think there is no more critical, no more greater threat to my generation than global warming. The second reason is that I think there is an extraordinary opportunity with this renewable energy standard to help rebuild the Oregon partnership, and I'll talk a little more about what that means in a minute. And finally, it's worth pointing out that I have received a huge number of phone calls, letters, and emails from constituents about this particular issue and their support for this particular bill. Let me talk briefly about global warming. You've heard it before. I'm not going to spend much time on it now, but this is the scenario for Oregon. Warmer, rainier winters with stronger storms, increased flooding and landslides from heavy rain, warmer, drier summers leading to more forest fires, higher demand for electricity, for air conditioning, and water shortages, reduced hydropower generation with all its implications for power as well as for fish, rising sea levels, which in combination with the flooding, landslides, and stronger storms increases the likelihood of extensive erosion and flooding on the coast, reduced biodiversity, new invasive species, and general public health risks, with hotter days bringing more smog and more disease-carrying insects, and an earlier spring bringing more pollen, causing hardship for folks with allergies and asthma. This is a bleak scenario. However, it's also the case that Oregon is perfectly situated, by virtue of its geography, to address climate change. With a strong renewable energy standard, we can become a world leader in the production, development, manufacturing, and use of renewable energy. You've already heard about these resources here, so I'll highlight them only very quickly. Wind power, centered around to the east of the Columbia River Gorge currently, but maturing in, or potentially also in areas into the Cascades, east of the Blue Mountains, and in the southeast corner of the state. Solar power, of course, a very promising resource. Even cloudy, rainy Western Oregon has half the solar energy of the best solar sites in the country, and we receive more sun than Germany, which leads the world in solar technology. According to most estimates, Oregon has the third highest potential for geothermal production in the country. Wood residues from our logging, agricultural crop industries, landfill gas already generate significant biomass energy. And if even a fraction of the wave energy could be captured off our coast, it would provide many multiples of our current generation capacity. Together, these renewables represent approximately 165 million megawatt hours per year in generation potential, or more than three times Oregon's current electricity use. Coupled with our region's existing hydropower resources, Oregon has within the foreseeable future an opportunity to move to an emissions-free or very minor emissions electricity system. Developing these resources would be a great contribution to the fight against global warming, would help our move our country towards energy independence. But I believe, and I want to stress in the sort of final minutes of my testimony, they also represent, doing this would represent an opportunity to help restore the type of economy and culture in Oregon that is necessary for us to effectively respond to challenges facing our healthcare system, our education system, our public safety system, indeed, to more effectively govern ourselves as a state in a new century. I want to look back a little at Oregon history. There was a time when the primary reason for the existence of Oregon cities was to do the shipping, the financing, the trading, and the manufacturing for Oregon's natural resource economy. That's why cities existed in this state, principally. A majority of Oregonians living in those cities had a connection to the land through their employment. And even if they didn't work for a company that was involved trading, banking, manufacturing for the natural resource economy, they were affected by people who were. They had a stake, or urban Oregonians had a stake in what happened in rural Oregon. Unfortunately, this is not the case to the same degree today. Many of the ties that once bound Oregon have been severed. Our urban economy is more connected to swings in Silicon Valley and Wall Street than it is to Mill City and Reedsport. The Oregon partnership has been frayed. Now, why does this matter? Well, when we lose those ties, it becomes a lot more difficult for us as Oregonians to find middle ground on these issues that are so critical. It becomes a lot more difficult for this institution to function. And to be quite frank, I have a harder time as a representative of an urban district explaining the need for compromise on issues that face the state to my urban constituents who lack ties to rural Oregon. Now, a renewable energy standard isn't going to solve this problem, at least not on its own. But I want you to join with me in imagining a future where more than a quarter of the energy that heats and lights the homes of my constituents in Portland comes from windmills in the Columbia Basin, solar arrays in Wheeler County, geothermal energy from the Klamath region, biomass from our forests, and wave energy off the coast. Imagine that Oregon's universities and companies lead the world in the research and development of new and better renewable technologies. Imagine that companies like PV Powered and Idatech, which I visited in Bend last week, Solar World in Hillsboro, and many, many others are industry leaders in the manufacturing of renewable technology. And imagine the connections that this scenario would recreate between people in very different parts of the state. Energy industry alone can't take the place of the timber, fishing, and other natural resource-based industries that have diminished in this state. Oregon will and should have a more diversified economy than it did. But we have, with this bill, the opportunity to restore some of those economic ties that bound rural and urban Oregon, and with them the cultural, the social, and the political ties that follow. And nothing, I maintain, could be more critical to meeting squarely the extraordinary challenges that we face in our increasingly complex and vast societies. Challenges that include global warming, certainly, but also making sure people are healthy, that food reaches our tables, and new technologies are used appropriately and ethically. I urge you to support Senate Bill 373, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Very nicely done. Questions for Representative? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Now to our host of friends in the audience. We have before us 5 full sign-up sheets. And we have an hour and 20 minutes. So what we're going to do is if we could respectfully try to get our remarks within about 3 minutes, that would help us. And as is my custom, and certainly the chairs and all the members of the committee, we want to make sure we spend special attention to people who have driven an awfully long way to get here, namely Hawkeye Realty. I've seen you up here twice, and you didn't get to testify last time. So with that, what we're going to do is I'm not going to jump around too much, but just so you know, that's what I want to make sure we have happen. First person that we will call up, Nancy Floyd.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Nancy Floyd. I am founder and co-managing and managing director of Nth Power, which was the country's first venture capital firm to specialize in new energy technologies. We have offices in Portland and San Francisco, and we have $400 million under management. But I'm also here really representing the voice of the three major checkbooks in the state, the venture capital checkbooks. I'm also here representing Stephen Saltzman of Intel Capital, and David Chen, who is general partner of OVP Ventures. And combined, our firms have about $3.2 billion under management. Already a lot has been said. I'm going to try not to repeat it and respect Senator Atkinson's three-minute time limit. But, you know, we as investors see that clean energy technology, given the right policy signals, are an opportunity to increase our investment in the state's technology sector. And I want to make just a couple of points about what's happening with both investment and technology development. First, clean energy technologies are seeing explosive growth. I know you've heard about solar and wind for decades, but, you know, Secretary Bradbury talked about some of the market drivers that are driving growth, you know, concerns about the availability of oil and natural gas, price volatility, climate change, China and India coming online. Last year, just in the renewables area, the market grew 39% globally. It's a $55 billion market last year, and it's expected to quadruple in the next 10 years. That puts it on a growth rate akin to PCs, wireless, and web technology in their heyday. Another example of the kind of growth that we are experiencing is that when I started investing in energy technologies, which was in the mid-90s, zero venture capital was going into energy technology companies. Last year, $2.4 billion was invested in clean energy companies. That represented one out of every $10 invested by venture capitalists in this country. So the growth is explosive. This is both an opportunity and a problem for Oregon, because we're not the only ones to see the potential here. There is huge, fierce competition to attract the investment capital that's going into the sector and the businesses that are being created. Good news is there's no one region that has a lock on clean energy technology. Just an example, in my portfolio of 39 investments that I've made, they are in 13 states. But the competition is fierce, and this is where Senate Bill 373 is important. If in order for us to build a clean energy industry in Oregon, and I will tell you why we're really uniquely positioned to do that, we need to enact comprehensive forward-looking policy, of which SB 373 is really the cornerstone of that. There is strong business support. I know you've already had hearings, but I'm just going to point out, I'm going to give you a copy of this. There was a letter that was delivered to all of you, your counterparts in Washington State, the governors of Oregon and Washington, and the congressional delegations of both states, signed by 240 business leaders, you know, outlining a seven-element policy agenda, of which Senate Bill 373 is one of the recommendations. Other recommendations worth noting are Senate Bill 581, which is the funding bill that would establish under the Oregon Investment Council, establish BEST as the next signature research center, so really building research and training in clean energy, as well as the bills around extending tax credit for renewables. The impact of attracting the investment capital and the jobs that are going to be created are actually going to increase our tax revenues. And the recommendation of these 240 business leaders is that you enact a policy framework that is, in fact, revenue positive as opposed to, you know, regulative neutral or negative. In a survey that was published by the NRDC said that 91% of investors surveyed said that favorable clean energy legislation was going to be a driving factor in where they invested and where they located businesses, which says that the keystone companies in clean energy are going to locate in regions where there's widespread and vigorous support. And somebody mentioned Germany and Spain. You know, they've had market-making policies there that have literally overnight created tens of thousands of jobs. Senate Bill 373 increases our prospects of getting capital, attracting venture capital to Oregon companies that are in clean energy. They have the opportunity to attract developers of renewable energy projects in the state, which will create not only jobs but tax revenue.
Nancy,
and, yes,
we're going to have to.
3 minutes is up. Okay, and it will position our state to attract new business. So I'm just going to end by saying the race is on. We are in the middle of the pack. 22 states have passed legislation like this. This is really fundamental, and if we pass the bill that's before us now, we will be given its targets and timetables. We won the top 3 or 4 states in the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you very much, Nancy. Samantha Carrillo, panel. Well, why don't all three come up? Go ahead, state your name for the record.
My name is Josh Schlossberg. I'm Communications Coordinator for Native Forest Council. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Climate change is perhaps the greatest challenge humankind has ever faced. The time has come for the state of Oregon to take genuine measures to drastically reduce carbon emissions. Renewable energy is part of the solution, but even more important than finding alternative fuel sources is to reduce our current level of ravenous consumption through efficiency and conservation. Whereas some forms of renewable energy can reduce Oregon's dependence on fossil fuels, such as solar and wind power, some distract attention away from making real changes or even do more harm than good. Forest biomass extraction from our public forests is one such proposal in which the drawbacks far outweigh any benefits. The United Nations, NASA, and the British government's Stern Review on Climate Change all agree that logging contributes one-third of human-caused carbon emissions released into the atmosphere. Our northwestern forests, particularly native forests now found mainly on public lands, contain vast stores of carbon in its soils, trees, and other vegetation. The most effective way to reduce carbon emissions in Oregon is to permanently protect these forests and the carbon they store by ending all forms of extraction on public lands. Instead, what is being proposed is an unprecedented landscape-wide removal of small trees and understory plants from intact native forests to fuel biomass energy factories. While supposedly leaving most of the larger museum trees, this logging by another name still releases carbon directly into the atmosphere, still requires an extensive system of roads resulting in soil erosion and siltation of watersheds, still depends upon the use of heavy gas-guzzling machinery compacting soil, and still devastates fish, wildlife, and endangered species habitat and forage. These massive, potentially disastrous projects are being pushed through under the guise of fuels reduction thinning. However, science suggests an ineffectiveness of fire prevention through mechanical fuels removal, fire being more a product of weather and forest type than fuel load. In fact, removal of the vital forest understory can actually increase the risk of fire by opening the forest to sunlight and wind, which dries forests and causes winds to carry fires further and hotter. Oregon State has the opportunity to make genuine progress in combating the climate crisis. While it may be tempting to take any quick fix and run with it, we don't have that luxury, since it's that mindset which got us into this jam in the first place. Climate change is the direct result of an inability or refusal to acknowledge the ramifications of our choices, in this case an addiction to fossil fuels, and the impacts on generations yet unborn. More specifically, climate change is what happens when we allow natural planetary systems to be disrupted by unrestricted human activity. Any solution to this crisis will involve the prevention of further disruption to natural, life-sustaining systems, not their further exploitation. Native Forest Council and our 2,000 members believe we must do everything possible to protect what's left and restore what's been lost of our forests, the lungs of the earth. We ask the Oregon Legislature to oppose any and all forms of biomass, forest biomass extraction on public lands, including current provisions in Senate Bill 373. Thank you.
2 minutes. 52 seconds. Nicely done.
Excellent. Practice.
Questions? Okay. Thank you.
My name is Samantha Cirillo. I'm representing Cascadia's Ecosystem Advocates, which presented some amendments to the bill. I'm also have a degree in biology and currently studying public policy. I support renewable energy incentives to reduce carbon emissions and promote local energy independence. However, SB 373 treats forest biomass the same as other more renewable energy sources. Forest biomass harvested around 200 feet of homes and other structures would help reduce fire risk in rural communities. It would be a good thing. It could also provide immediate heat source for homes and schools, and some small-scale electricity during emergencies or during the summer when there's strain on utilities. Thinning in areas far from human populations, however, would not reduce fire risk. In fact, it could even increase risk. The scientific evidence is very conflicting right now over the value of thinning, and it really depends on the area. However, the timber industry wants to use the public's fear of fire and rhetoric about restoration thinning to justify large-scale thinning projects, contracting with federal agencies for tens of thousands of acres of public forest lands without any scientific review or public input. This is already starting to happen. Thus, SB 373 would give the timber industry, which gets resources and roads already on the public's dime, an additional financial incentive. The purpose of the incentive should be to benefit the public. But how much would the public benefit from a giant biomass facility, 50 or 100 megawatts, like is already in California or New Mexico? The energy lost in conversion from biomass to electricity is 70 to 80%. And line loss from transporting electricity over long distances, 5 to 10%. So large biomass facilities to produce electricity would not help us subsidize our energy portfolio and will not create more a sustainable economy. It could even be self-defeating. Our forests are already severely depleted. We need our forests, particularly west of the Cascades, to continue sequestering carbon to reduce climate change. And our snowpacks, we know, are dwindling with climate change. We need our intact forests to retain water that we need for drinking and farming. This will be critical. The proposed new language that says biomass for obtained from projects which would increase forest health or reduce risk of catastrophic climate change is not strong enough. The same rhetoric is already being used on public lands to decimate forests. We need to exclude old-growth forests, late successional reserves, and wilderness and roadless areas from such projects. We need record-keeping of the sources of the biomass projects and impact assessment. And that is why, in one of my amendments, I asked for a Forest Biomass Advisory Council with a fixed composition of scientists. We also need to allow citizen enforcement. So I ask you to please take a precautionary approach. Take a little extra time, because I know that we have very good leadership on this committee, and change the bill to restrict forest biomass use, limit the size of biomass facilities, and please provide a mechanism for public awareness of biomass for energy sources and enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Kathy Ging, Eugene. The bill as drafted is weighted toward wind. The solar energy carve-out should be increased. It was developed on a least cost basis, so the main thing that qualifies is wind. Please amend it to enhance solar. You can easily include 100 megawatts by 2015 and 1,000 megs by 2025. ODO says that $10 billion a year is spent by Oregonians on energy, up almost 100% from $5.5 billion 5 years ago. Money leaks from our economy when a decentralized solar on-site energy approach could instead provide jobs in manufacturing, plumbing, electrical, plus free up funds for taxpayers to pay their taxes. I have been a realtor for 21 years and recently directed Lane County Energy Roundup public forums attended by 400 persons. I was also on the mayor's Sustainable Business Initiative Technical Advisory Committee. In the late 80s, the last time I testified to the legislature, I lobbied for passage of the revised version of Oregon's Renewable Energy Residential Tax Credit that I had initiated. In the front row to watch 85% of the residential solar business go bankrupt after sunsetting of the state and federal tax credits in the 80s, I had directed Oregon Energy Roundup at the State Fair from 82 to 84 and saw the exhibitor space reduced from 2,400 to 400 square feet, and then almost nobody was left in the solar business. We got the tax credit passed through the legislature with the help of Howdy Richmond at that time. It is still in effect. Yet solar has not received educational, government, and utility promos and financing that could have resulted in wider use today, not only in water and space heating, but in electricity production and farm irrigation. ODO wrote in Oregon's Energy Future in the early 80s that solar energy could at that time, with existing tech, provide 50% of Oregon's domestic water and space heating. Yet the report predicted that only 5% water and 2% space heating would be supplied by 2010. This is due to a leadership vacuum which you can help to remedy. GAO's report, Region at the Crossroad, the PNW searches for new energy sources decades ago, concluded that the tech for the energy transition was available and other tech would be ready in the near future. But the major impediment was going to be the resistance by utilities and DSIs. Times are changing. The solar radiation lab at the U of O has found that a 10% increase in solar radiation in Eugene, while the snowpack west of the Cascades may decrease up to 50%, impacting hydropower. One thing I learned as assistant librarian at the Bank of America World Headquarters Library in San Francisco is that sharp managers diversify their holdings. This is what I'm asking you to do, to amend the bill to include solar increments and allow steady solar watt to have a place in our roofs. I learned at the Solar Electric Power Summit last summer that the wind will provide limited amounts of power and those sites will be used up. At that point, solar can best meet the peak loads, including on the ratepayer roofs and the yards. Washington adopted a 64 cents a kilowatt hour incentive for residents who use solar cells and inverters made there. A $600 million silicon refinement plant and solar cell plant are now being built. By providing subsidies, they brought down currently high solar cell prices from tomorrow's prices till today and to compete with the electricity market.
Ma'am?
And I just referred one last thing. Rocky Mountain Institute wrote smallisprofitable.org, 207 ways the electric utilities benefit from distributed utilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you all very much. Next panel, we'll call up Mr. Craig Campbell, Mr. Scott Hannestad, who's been on the he's on the first page and the fifth, and Mr. Bob Reese, please.
Okay.
Is Bob Reese here? No. Paul Wooden, if you could join us. Thank you.
You wish to go first?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here representing Covanta Energy, which operates the energy-to-waste conversion plant that combusts municipal solid waste up in Brooks, just north of us here. I want to begin by thanking the members of the committee for the time they've shared with me and also the efforts that the chair has spent with me to understand this particular niche issue within the bill. And I'm here to testify in support of amendments which would include combustion of municipal solid waste in the definition of renewable energy sources. Currently, the draft amendment to the bill specifically excludes the combustion of solid waste as a renewable energy source. And before I go into the details regarding Covanta's amendments and the benefits of this form of energy for the environment and from an environmental standpoint, I wanted to briefly describe the plant in Brooks. Though it's one of 20 such facilities operated by Covanta located in the 15 states across the United States, it's only one such plant in Oregon. The plant in Brooks has the capacity to deal with 550 tons of municipal solid waste per day, which is about 130 trucks. From that, it generates 13 megawatts of energy from steam power generators. About 11 of that is sold to PGE on the market as a renewable form of energy currently. Energy from waste facilities, including the one in Brooks, are subject to rigorous federal emission standards, as a result of those restrictions, the EPA has designated that type of energy as one of the cleanest in the world. Recent additions to the plant, which occurred in 1998, in order to meet the EPA requirements under the Federal Clean Air Act, include activated carbon injection to help control mercury that goes through the waste stream. The mercury bonds to resulting ash, which acts a lot like concrete. The addition of the ash and lime chemically and thermally stabilizes the mercury so that it is not subject to leaching from rainwater and other things once it's put into the monofill. In addition, the facility in Brooks extracts 75 to 80 tons per week of ferrous material. That material is extracted after it's gone through an incineration process, which couldn't occur from the waste stream otherwise because it wouldn't be separated from the material that it's attached to. Historically, there have also been concerns raised from combustion of municipal solid waste regarding dioxin emissions. According to the EPA, modern incinerators, including the one in Brooks, are no longer a significant source of dioxins. The emission controls that are required to be in place have reduced the dioxin emissions from plants like the one in Brooks by 99.9%. The EPA has demonstrated that emissions from just one family using a burn barrel produces more emissions than a modern incinerator disposing of 200 tons of waste per day. Because of the strict EPA emission standards, combustion of municipal solid waste has significantly less emissions that result from biomass boilers and hog fuel boilers, both of which are included in the current draft amendment to the bill as renewable energy sources. Furthermore, they're subject to much more stringent requirements for monitoring, testing, and reporting. Combustion of municipal solid waste reduces the volume of waste that would have to go to a landfill by 90%, thus preventing the need for land acquisition over time for such use. In addition, the 10% that does go to the landfill does not produce methane, a potent greenhouse gas that's 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide. The draft amendment to the bill currently designates energy from methane gas gathered at landfills as a renewable energy source. Such a process, however, only captures between 20 and 40% of the methane that's created in the solid waste in the landfill and only produces about 20 kilowatt tons per hour, whereas the energy from waste combustion of municipal solid waste generates about 650. In short, the current draft amendment to the bill allow within the definition of renewable energy sources forms of energy that are far less environmentally beneficial than the energy produced by the Brooks plant. But Covanta, in its proposed amendments, is not asking to be counted as part of the 25% new renewable standard. The Brooks plant, first of all, doesn't meet the January 1st, 1995 deadline. But energy from waste is currently renewable in Oregon, as it is in federal law and the law in the 15 other states where it is located, and therefore we believe it's a reasonable and appropriate to be included in the list of renewable technologies that are in Senate Bill 373. Since that's about the seventh nod I've gotten from you, Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that you are asking me to wrap up, and so I would ask the members of the committee merely to look at the amendments we've provided in the hopes that this particular form of energy would be included in the bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Campbell. We'll take the whole panel, and then we'll ask for some questions. Where's Hawkeye Realty? That's over 100 miles from here.
Yes, it's in Hood River, sir.
Thanks for coming twice.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. My name is Scott Honstead, Hawkeye Realty, Hood River. We've got wind, solar, and water there, so you heard from our county administrator the other day. I earned my bachelor's degree in management and human relations. I'm originally from the Show Me State, so things that happen on the East and West Coast take a little while to get there, and the good ideas and the right ideas are adopted. I'm taking action today for my five-year-old, her daughter's future. I'm a 14-year utility veteran, also known as Sprint Long Distance, PCS, Sprint Local Telephone. Now they're called Embark, and they're embarking on a new journey themselves. The phone fiber optic network, I think people remember that was a huge and tremendous risk. Please help these early adopters today make these investments happen here and now in Oregon. The customers are always going to be there, and the network will be too. Obviously, we need to beef up the transmission lines. I've heard that plenty in this testimony. AT&T and MCI finally saw the light. Do you think that they wanted to install a fiber optic network before its introduction by the innovator and the risk taker GTE Sprint? No, they didn't want to do it, and the technology was there. Somebody had to step forward and do it. I was the honest salesman to the cities, the counties, and the hospitals, and they all face life and death situations. Yeah, and even I was the account manager for the state of Washington, our neighbors to the north. Values, what do I value in life? My daughter Asante and my time are both very precious and placed higher in my daily activities these days. First is opportunity. You know, people are motivated by two things, either opportunity or moving away from things. And taking action to move oneself toward a desired experience, a laugh, or a hoped-for story ending is, you know, what a lot of people do. But sometimes they're motivated by other things called fear. You know, and I want to ask you to ponder deeply, what is it that really motivates you? Why, you might ask? Because both are in play here today, and the solution is the same on this issue of renewable energy. Should we be afraid of rising prices of oil and other states to the north and south of Oregon getting ahead of us and attracting these corporations to their states, providing the jobs and revenues to their constituents? I choose opportunity. Either way, it's all good. Let's dig really deep here. Have you ever attended a funeral and listened to an epitaph? It's the story of a person's life and all the good which they did while they're in this form. Have you ever wished that you had just one last chance to say what you never had to say to that individual who's departed from you? I think we've all experienced that. What I'm about to say is a very heavy subject. 1 year ago today, I awoke from a coma at Emmanuel Legacy Hospital after I was life-flighted there with a gunshot wound to the head. You think my priorities have changed? They have. When you're lying on the bed, you have a unique perspective on one's own life and what you value. Now I get it. Now I get what the elderly and those people mean in the twilight years of their lives. If they're honest with themselves and those that they care deeply about, they will tell you that they regret, of all things, they now wish they had done, that they didn't get done. It's not the miswords, the angry things, or the misdeeds that they did that they really regret the most. Honestly, reminiscing over things, hopes and dreams, they were never fulfilled. Those are what hurts the most. These days, I now wonder what all the former presidents of these United States thought about missed opportunities in their own leadership roles in this country. Their own could've, would've, and should've. I think it'd be interesting to talk to them. Opportunity is in front of us here today. I have a new role today, the salesman for the homeowners and electric users, the people of Oregon. I know it keeps the CEOs and CFOs awake at night because I've been with them. I've been their professional salesperson to guide them through major decisions facing them in their life. I wish to share just two of these opportunities. Citizens Bank in Corvallis, they adopted voice over IP technology, running a whole bank in their network. Also, Benton County, Washington, they installed a wireless phone system that had never been built before to run the jail. Imagine opening and closing jail cells with a wireless telephone. That was taking a risk. eBay changed the marketplace. They also created a wonderful and new level field leveling opportunity for all of us, and they also created the ultimate market satisfaction survey,
Scott,
about who to do business with.
I have to ask you to wrap it up a little bit.
You got it.
Thanks.
What I'd like to ask you to do today, get a hold of Sylvia Haynes from 3E Strategies and get in your car, please, and go down to Bend, Oregon and see this stuff working. It is working. You're not going to be taking the risk. And I'm sure she'd be glad to set up a tour for you. And the other thing is the bankers will give credit for the income-to-debt ratio. When the utility bills are not there or they've been reduced, they'll even finance in the furnaces and the windows, and those bankers are putting their money where their mouth is. Thank you very much for hearing me today.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Paul.
Mr. Vice Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to talk today. For the record, my name is Paul Wood, and I'm Executive Director of the Community Renewable Energy Association. We're a newly formed Chapter 199 nonprofit organization that represents community renewables for Oregon counties, cities, and small businesses working to put renewables in the state of Oregon. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 373. My main interest is in supporting the community piece of small, locally owned renewables and making sure that in the proposed RPS there is a place for the smaller projects. It's interesting hearing the comments about people's impressions about this bill and the perception that it is predominantly a large wind bill. The reality is that a number of us were part of the Caucus for Communities that helped draft the language that's in the bill to make sure there is a place for locally owned projects. You have in front of you a map of the state of Oregon that represents projects that are currently underway in various communities in the state, from wave energy on the coast to solar and geothermal in the south and the Lakeview Klamath area, to small wind and biomass in the northeastern portion of the state, to wind, small hydro for irrigation districts, and bio in the mid-Columbia area. I would venture to say that most of you on this commission have constituents in your areas trying to put together locally owned small renewable projects. We see locally owned renewable projects as one of the few economic development opportunities available for rural Oregon. A single 10-megawatt wind project with a few turbines represents an $18 million local corporation in Baker County. A $15 million biomass facility can bring jobs, taxes, and revenue to Lake County. These small distributed generation projects help provide rural Oregon with energy independence and self-sufficiency. It also keeps the dollars local in the communities rather than leaving the state to large corporations. So I thank you for the opportunity to talk today, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Campbell, have you submitted an amendment for that definition of municipal solid waste?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have. If you have, if you look at the back of the testimony that you received, you'll see a copy of the amendment that I have. Now, it is not an LC form because, of course, the bill has not gone through the amended form from what's been circulated.
And you presented that to the chair also?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have.
Senator Beyer, any questions for this panel? Thank you all, and Scott.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming all the way down.
Glad to be here.
Special day. Thank you. We're going to call up John Miller, Stuart Labiewicz. Thank you. And Alan Hitchenbottom. Is Alan in the room? Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Miller. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. We are a group of small business contractors, energy professionals, distributors, and manufacturers that work in the solar energy industry. These businesses provide jobs and economic opportunities throughout Oregon, and I'm here today speaking in favor of Senate Bill 373, as I believe strongly that this measure is going to set a needed course toward Oregon's clean energy future. There's no doubt that renewable energy can provide jobs and economic opportunities. You've heard lots of testimony on that. In the past 2 years alone, the solar industry has targeted $1 billion of economic investment for the Northwest economy. There's a $600 million plant in Washington, Moses Lake, Washington, and now a $400 million 500-megawatt solar PV cell plant in Hillsboro. That 500-megawatt plant is as large as the entire industry was in 2001. So that's how fast the solar industry is growing. These investments are welcome and will provide high-wage jobs for a long time to come, and they will not be the last of these investments, as Oregon and Washington both are continuing to aggressively attract these manufacturers. While it's easy to see that these benefits, the benefits these companies have to offer the Northwest, there's also an important question relevant to Senate Bill 373. And that is, what does solar and other community renewables contribute toward our energy portfolio? And I would reiterate the comments that Paul Wooden made earlier about community renewables as well. But I will just talk a little bit about some of the community renewables from my point of view from the solar industry. Community renewables essentially make up the array of distributed generation sources such as wind and solar that are typically under 10 megawatts, and they offer added benefits that complement our current centralized grid structure and energy portfolio. Let's see, I've tried to edit these down to keep within my 3 minutes here. So distributed generation renewables, by their very nature, take advantage of not focusing all of our energy resources in a single location. This distribution provides security and other valuable benefits. Strategic installations by the utilities can reduce grid upgrade costs and help with transmission bottleneck issues. Solar energy provides critical peak power consistently, predictably, and reliably. And we know this from the 25 years of data and research that the University of Oregon Solar Radiation Monitoring Lab has done. Distributed generation sources such as solar and wind complement each other well and will work with other community renewables to strengthen our energy portfolio. One of the things I'd like to do here today is to dispel some of the myths about solar energy that are quite widely held. These myths typically focus on size, and as we know, when it comes to the energy industry, size definitely matters. The myths have been shattered over the past decade by Germany, Japan, California, and others. It took Germany 10 years to get their first 100 megawatts of solar installed. In the next year after that, they installed an additional 100 megawatts in one single year. In 2005 alone, they installed 600 megawatts. That was enough for 66,000 homes. Germany now has over 2.2 gigawatts of solar PV installed, enough to power 242,000 homes. They will likely install a gigawatt in 2007. And it's interesting to note that much of Germany, their best solar resource is equivalent to the resource of Astoria, Oregon. In California, 354 megawatts of utility-scale solar has been operating for over a decade, providing reliable power for thousands of homes during peak load hours. This utility-scale solar has operated with integrated natural gas backup, providing operational dispatch peak power during critical high load times. In addition to those utility solar plants, two large California utilities recently signed power purchase agreements for in excess of a gigawatt of utility-scale solar. These facilities that are under construction will be larger than any of the existing wind farms in the Northwest. The solar industry provides reliable peak load power and has proven itself for well over a decade, and that reliable operation is one of the reasons billions of dollars of venture funding is pouring into the solar industry. It's an industry that we want to attract here to Oregon. Community renewables are providing valuable sources of local, clean, and affordable energy increasingly throughout the world, and they will do so in the Pacific Northwest as well. Community renewables belong in our energy portfolio, and I urge you to consider the benefits they offer as you move this legislation forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Stuart?
My name is Stuart Lieberwitz. I'm with the Douglas County Global Warming Coalition. I'm a member of the board, and I represent over 300 members in the coalition across Douglas County. The Douglas County Global Warming Coalition strongly supports Senate Bill 373, which would create a renewable energy standard for the state of Oregon. As a grassroots organization that has worked on the critical issue of global warming for over 4 years, we believe this bill represents a significant step forward in finding a solution to the climate crisis. The recent report issued by the International Panel on Climate Change has made it clear that we must act with a sense of urgency to ensure the livability of the planet for future generations. By joining 20 other states across America in this effort, Oregon will be able to take advantage of the emerging technologies that exist and are being developed to resolve this problem. Global warming presents both a challenge and an opportunity. Our generation has a moral imperative to do what is necessary to leave a future in which our children will not bear the burden of the devastating consequences of global warming. But our window of opportunity is closing fast, and the time to act is now. By ensuring that 25% of our electricity is produced by clean, renewable energy by 2025, we will have the opportunity to take advantage of the economic benefits these renewable resources will offer in the 21st century. According to the report of the International Panel on Climate Change, potential economic and human consequences will be unprecedented both globally and locally. Around the world, temperatures may increase over the next century by nearly 8 degrees, with sea levels rising to 2 feet. If the economic repercussions of such a change in our planet seem incalculable, how much more so the human consequences? Population displacement, drought, and deaths from heat waves will face future generations unless we act today. Information just released from the upcoming second installment of the IPCC's report stated that hundreds of millions of people throughout the world will be short of water in 20 years, and with this, death rates from malaria, dengue fever, and malnutrition will rise. Nor will Oregon be immune from the consequences of global warming. In the Northwest, diminished snowpacks and droughts will significantly impact timber, wine, skiing, and tourist industries. For the Douglas County Global Warming Coalition, our concerns go beyond just the economic. We believe we are morally and ethically bound to look our children in the eye and tell them we did all we could to stop global warming. This bill, Senate Bill 373, represents such a statement to our children.
Stuart, 2 minutes, 59 seconds. Perfectly done. Thank you very much, Alan.
A great constituent from Douglas County.
I see that.
For the record, my name is Alan Hickenbottom. I'm the Northwest Regional Director for Grow Solar. I want to thank the Chair and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify in favor of Senate Bill 373. I work out of the Portland area, and we have a major distribution center in Grants Pass. Senator Atkinson, my colleague, said Bob Maynard, sends his regrets, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from him on this at some point. There's a little argument that renewable energy is good for the planet, ours, and more importantly, our children's, and if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be in this business, but a business person I am. And there's no doubt that this bill, when combined with the other incentives that are moving through the legislature this year, will create a significant economic opportunity for the state of Oregon. I mean, it really, you know, energy development is going to happen no matter what. Dirty or clean, local or remote, these jobs are going to be created. These projects are going to go in the ground. Senate Bill 373 helps ensure that those jobs, that economic development, those projects happen here and not elsewhere. In the interest of time, I'll credit most of my chat about solar to John. Thank you for that. Although I would ask you to quickly look at the documents I gave you as far as Oregon Solar Radiance and the utilities map, and I wanted to tie into Representative Cannon's comments about the remaking of the Oregon Partnership. I think you'll notice that most of Oregon's really nice solar areas comprise nicely of the cooperatives, rural electric cooperatives in our state, and I think there's a developing partnership there as far as creating power there and moving that to the urban areas will be used. And I would also like to echo the comments of John and Paul on the importance of small renewables and community renewables and being able to build that. So solar, of course, jobs will produce jobs across the spectrum, residential, commercial, industrial, utility scale, engineering, trades, rural and urban. And I think in closing, a couple of paragraphs to close with, this becomes even more important, especially rural Oregon, when considering the upcoming BPA contract changes. In 2011, for the first time in a couple of generations, publicly owned utility customers will be exposed to market rate power. Wouldn't it be great if those new generation resources were located and controlled locally? Senate Bill 373 helps provide the framework for that. Finally, the big windup. In summary, Senate Bill 373 will be beneficial to the planet by promoting clean energy, our country by promoting independence from foreign energy sources, our state through locally sited and controlled projects, and our communities by making sure those jobs and projects development is located here. Thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate any questions.
Thank you. I have one quick question. Sure. In your testimony, the last page, there's a photograph.
Oh, yes. Those are some sites in Germany. I just want to give folks an idea what utility-scale solar looks like.
Would if Oregon were to move to something like that, would have you ventured so far to see if that would require FAA notice?
That is not notice and all that. We've had county zoning we've looked at. Certainly there tend to be no bird issues. These tend to be in the 5 to 10 to 15 acre size ranges. We're looking at a couple projects in eastern Oregon with folks that have several thousand acres, so it's we believe those can be well hidden, and I don't know about FAA. I don't suppose they would be any different than a city full of glass.
Well, if it could mitigate goose issues in the Willamette Valley, it might be a bigger selling point. Any other questions?
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you, the three. Right. Thank you very much. Polly Sterling, I believe, also from Roseburg. And then a couple of names here that I'm having a hard time reading. Walt Minkowski. Thank you. Minkowski. And Mark Derlitz.
Darienzo?
Yes. Please.
Denise first.
I guess so. Hi, I'm Polly Sterling from Roseburg, Oregon in Douglas County. I'm also a member of the Douglas County Global Warming Coalition, a board member. As far as global warming goes, the scientific data is in and it's overwhelmingly clear. In the International Panel on Climate Change report, a panel of over 600 scientists across the world has come to a consensus that is now certain that global warming is here, that it's human-caused, and it has potentially devastating consequences for all of us. And this consensus is now being expressed both publicly and privately across the country. Private corporations, small and large businesses are weighing in, and this, as you've already heard today here, and also public, state, and cities are implementing legislation to solve this problem, which is affecting us all. With Senate Bill 373, Oregon will put into place a long-term commitment to renewable energy. This means we will not only be reducing our CO2 emissions in the near future, but the renewable energy will become the economic foundation of our state. I cannot express strongly enough how I feel that this is an urgent issue that we must deal with immediately, and so I urge the passage of Senate Bill 373 so that we can turn this crisis into a benefit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the committee,
if you could pull the microphone over to you.
Oh, sorry, yes. Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Walt Mitkeski. I reside at 6815 Southeast 31st in Portland. The testimony that you have in front of you today is dated March 8th. I was here last Thursday. I thank you for the opportunity to come again today and be heard. I appreciate it very much. As background, I'm an environmental engineer licensed in Oregon and Idaho since 1975, practicing the design and construction of and construction management of water and wastewater treatment plants for 31 years. I retired from full-time employment as a professional engineer in 2004 to work as a volunteer towards solving the interrelated problems of fossil fuel, air pollution, climate disruption, and armed conflict over increasingly scarce petroleum resources. And I appear before you today representing myself as a concerned citizen of Oregon, the United States, and planet Earth. I just want to say that solar, wind, wave, and biomass power are technologically viable alternatives for electricity production, but they need a public policy mandate like SB 373 to bring them online. That's all we engineers need. Tell us what to do, and we will do it. The goal of clean, renewable energy supplying 25% of Oregon's demand by year 2025 is feasible, and SB 373 will provide that public mandate. Now, as a consumer, I've heard that concern looms about the potential for increased electricity rates that may result from a renewable energy standard in Oregon. I just want to say that I feel as a consumer there are adequate safeguards in the proposed bill to control costs to an acceptable level. Also, as a PGE or Portland General Electric customer, I participated in the renewable power program since its inception to demonstrate that I and other PGE and PP&L customers are willing to pay a little bit more each month for clean, renewable power. Now, I'd like to tell you that I just recently signed up as a PGE customer for their clean wind program, because not only is it clean power, but they guarantee me a fixed rate for 20 years. How can I turn that down? Finally, I want to address the need for SB 373 from the perspective of water and wastewater treatment in Oregon. The public demands, as it should, clean, safe drinking water and clean lakes, rivers, and oceans. The technology to treat water for drinking and for safe discharge requires more and more electricity. I hope you agree with me, though, that it doesn't make sense to meet the remaining electrical demand with power generated increasingly from fossil fuels. It's not good public policy to be cleaning our waters using energy whose generation byproducts increasingly pollute our air and water. We need clean energy to clean our water. passing SB 373 helps to do just that, and I urge you to move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming back. And, Mark, thank you for taking the day off to be here. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I was here last Thursday, and I provided written testimony back at that time. And I'm here. My name is Mark D'Arienzo. I live at 1634 North Alberta Street in Portland, Oregon. But I'm here today representing Jobs with Justice. We support Senate Bill 373, the Renewable Energy Standard. Portland Jobs with Justice is a community labor coalition based in Portland metro area. We have over 80 organizational members that include union locals and community groups. We also have over 3,000 active individual members. Portland Jobs with Justice focuses on issues around family wage jobs and workplace justice. We strongly support the Renewable Energy Standard. We believe this bill will put Oregon on the road to becoming a leader in renewable energy. We think this bill will pave the way for good-paying jobs and economic revitalization across the state. The Renewable Energy Standard encourages the development of the energy resources that we have right here in Oregon: wind, geothermal, tidal, biomass, and solar. Much of the money spent to develop these resources will be spent in the state. These dollars will help create jobs in Oregon. And as we generate more and more energy in the state and region, more of our energy dollars will be spent locally, further bolstering the state's economy. It is a good sign that Solar World recently announced that it will invest nearly $400 million in a Hillsboro plant to manufacture solar cells. The company expects to hire up to 1,000 workers. If SB 373 passes, we expect to hear more such announcements. But this bill is more about more than jobs in the valley. As we develop wind and other renewable energy resources, the rural areas of Oregon will get a much-needed economic shot in the arm, providing good-paying jobs for working families, increased tax revenues for cash-strapped counties, and much-needed payments to farmers and other landowners. Portland Jobs with Justice also supports the Renewable Energy Standard because it will help us move toward energy independence and reduce greenhouse gases. Senate Bill 373 is good for working families, good for the environment, and good for all Oregonians. We urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Questions? Thank you for coming back and all the way from Roseburg. Thank you. I do want to say a special thanks to the audience for your flexibility. We're really working hard to make sure that we get everyone who's been here twice. This is a very popular issue, and people that have traveled from a long distance to be here. During some of our earlier hearings, we've had people drive from Baker, LeGrand, certainly Southern Oregon, the South Coast, which takes an all-day commitment to get here and a super late night to get back. So we're trying to get through that, but I want to thank everyone, and we're doing just great. It's Mr. Hap Boyd, Hap, from the Bay Area. Come on up. Robin Rabaroff. Robin? Going. Okay. Kevin Lynch, would you come up, please? Two of you can. Hap, thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and let her fly.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is actually Robert Boyd, but I'm known as Hap. I'm from the Bay Area. However, I have two sons that live in Portland, and I own a home there, too. So I have one foot in this camp here in Oregon.
So do we get your taxes?
Multnomah.
Just kidding.
No, Multnomah County.
Just kidding. Strike that from the record.
That's on the video, I can tell already.
Well, it says HAP here. So
no, that's fine. That's what
I'm sorry.
People call me, among other things. You know, we've really heard a lot of the reasons why Senate Bill 373 is the proper thing to do. And I guess I'd like to give one illustration, and that would be to use the state of Texas. Texas in 1999 passed a renewable energy standard, and at that time, they were one of the earliest states. They grew their requirement over time. They were supposed to have accomplished it by 2009. By 2005, it was clear that they were going to overshoot what they'd planned, and that was 2,000 megawatts. They then pa- passed another bill which added 3,000 megawatts to bring it to a total of 5,000 megawatts. Texas is now the number one state in the country in terms of installed wind capacity. And this was all started by a guy by the name of George W. Bush, who was governor at the time. So what I want to say is this isn't a partisan issue. Global climate change, clean energy, economic development crosses both sides of the aisle. And I would hope that you all would remember that when you pass this bill.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Lynch. I'm the head of public policy and regulation for PPM Energy, a business headquartered in Portland. We have about 200 employees here in Oregon, and we've already committed and invested about $500 million in wind energy here in this state. We're the second largest developer of wind energy in the country, and we'd like to do a lot more here and in other places. It's always good to speak with to speak after Mr. Boyd, who's been in this business a long time and is a witness to its tremendous growth and its success and knows that there's a lot more to come. There are some people who would like for Oregon to get one of Mr. Boyd's baseball teams from the Bay Area, but that's probably a discussion for another hearing and another day. Four quick points to contemplate about this bill.
That very well could kill this bill.
Definitely doesn't fit the relating clause. Just four points quickly. I think you've heard a lot about the urban-rural benefits to this bridge to this bill. Mr. Boyd mentioned the phenomenon in Texas, which is now the largest wind state in the country, and one of the interesting attributes to why then-Governor Bush pushed the RPS in Texas in the first place was that wind energy would help to relieve some of the air pollution burdens on the urban areas in Texas, the non-attainment zones in Houston and Dallas and other cities. And so there's been a tremendous economic benefit in rural Texas, where the wind blows hard and often, and an environmental benefit in the Houstons of the state, and they're now well on their way to 6,000 megawatts of wind generation in that one state. There are other examples where urban and rural benefits combine under state RPSs, and Oregon is a notable place where that potential can be met as well. Second point that I'd like to make. There's been some concern raised about transmission and integration requirements for renewable energy. And let me just say this. I think it was said once last week that it doesn't matter what the form of generation is, this region needs more electric transmission. There is no question about that. It almost doesn't matter what you build. We have to build more transmission to get power to loads anyway. And wind is not that bad of a way to, it's a good resource to get that done. There has been a lot of work undertaken by the Northwest Power and Conservation Council and the Bonneville Power Administration and a number of stakeholders to look at how to integrate wind into our grid, and they have they're on the verge of publishing an initial report that will indicate that integrating 5,000 to 6,000 megawatts of wind into the regional grid is not only feasible, but it can be done at a reasonable price. So we're on the way to solving the problem. It's not just a problem that's been identified. Third point that I'd like to make is that there are some people who think we ought to just stop at incentives and not require a standard for along the lines of this legislation. And I think the incentives are very important for the production side of the equation. They help attract capital to this state, which competes with other jurisdictions for investment in renewable energy. The important part about this legislation, Senate Bill 373, is that it drives the consumption side of the equation. And you could end up without this legislation with some renewable generation being developed in Oregon, but Oregon electric consumers still being exposed to the volatility of the natural gas and coal markets and all of those swinging and probably upward-heading prices, while other customers in other states, because we have an interstate electricity market, would be the beneficiaries of the stable fuel-cost-free renewable energy energy that's generated here. So it makes sense to address this issue from both sides, both production and consumption. That's why it makes sense for the package of both the credits and the renewable energy standards legislation to pass in this session. Finally, the last issue that's been raised by some is, won't by setting a mandate, won't that raise prices by creating an artificial floor? And I can assure you that we have a lot of competition in this industry. A lot of us will be up here today, developers, talking in common in support of this legislation, but we compete very fiercely in the market for serving the customers who want renewable energy. A lot of sellers and a lot of buyers make for a very good market and make for good outcomes for customers, and that's what this legislation will do. So in conclusion, our company and our employees here in Oregon support Senate Bill 373 and hope that the committee will pass it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Love to take on Texas. Questions from Senator Pazansky.
Okay, trivia question. How many counties are there in the state of Texas?
Good one. 243, I think.
254.
Damn. 254?
254.
Is that a question?
No.
That was good. No. I worked with a guy from Texas once. He says, you know, up there in that little state of yours, Oregon, he says, we're so much bigger than you. And I said, if you took the state of Oregon and you ironed out all of our mountains, we're a lot bigger than Texas.
Damn right. And proud of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next panel will be Dennis Wild, Brad Zinger. I hope I said that correctly. And Dennis Wild, Brad Zinger, Tom Penn. Please. Thank you. Go ahead.
Ready?
I'm ready. Okay.
Dennis Weil. I'm a partner at Girding Edlin Development here speaking in support of Senate Bill 373. First, a little background. Girding Edlin is a large regional real estate development company doing business in Oregon, Washington, and California. We're headquartered in Portland. We have annual gross revenues in excess of $2.5 billion. We do a large, virtually all of our work is large urban infill projects up and down the West Coast. All of our projects pursue an environmentally responsible strategy. We use the LEED certification system as a metric for measuring our performance. We have grown to be a successful company in large part because of our environmental ethic. It is the right thing to do, and it is also very good for business. So why do we care? Our built environment represents about 40% of all the greenhouse gas emissions. And so what we do in our industry matters a great deal. As you've heard multiple times today, the planet is undergoing significant climate change, and we must act very shortly in order to make to address this issue. Most climatologists are now saying we have 10 years or less in which to make significant changes. That's a darn short period of time. And I don't want my grandchildren asking me in 15 years why I let it happen. So what are we doing? All of our projects are currently targeting a 50% reduction in energy use baseline on conventional standard building practices. And we're committed that within 5 years, all of our projects will generate more energy than they consume. So how are we going to do that? I have no idea, but, you know, I have some friends here that are going to help me achieve that objective. We know that from our experience that there is a lot that we can do. We just completed a large project in Portland for OHSU. It's the new Center for Health and Healing in South Waterfront. In that project, we're saving over 60% of the energy and 70% of the water that would be consumed by a conventional building, and that will pay back in less than 3 years. And that's prior to any incentives, tax credits, or other mechanisms that are currently available. We have two new buildings in design that are targeting net zero energy and 100% of the wastewater treated on site. So I'm citing these facts in part to demonstrate that there's a tremendous amount that can be done already, and the resources available through Senate Bill 373 provide us additional opportunities. Because part of our strategy is to have both on-site and off-site renewable energy generation. So we see that as where we could become a part of the RPS solution within the state of Oregon. And for Oregon to become part of the state of the block of western states committed to a renewable energy portfolio. Carbon trading and the growing realization of the impact of fossil fuel contaminants on global warming will lead to much higher costs for carbon-based fuel sources in our energy supply. Thus, renewable energy has already proven to be good for Oregon business. This is a huge opportunity to bridge the rural-urban divide, and since the renewable resources lie mostly in the rural areas. So why should Oregon lead? Biomass, wind, solar, as you've heard, are going to become increasingly dominant as an economic engine for the state.
Dennis, can you...
Yeah. Are we done?
Just
all right.
Thank you.
So anyway, you have my support and our encouragement for you to move on this bill.
Thank you, and thank you for enduring an hour and a half to testify. Appreciate it.
My name is Tom Peen. I'm the president of the American Institute of Architects, the Oregon chapter, which is a statewide organization of about 1,000 members, and we represent the national AIA organization, which is about 78,000 members. And who are we? We're the people that actually design the buildings that use all the energy that you're talking about. An astounding 48% of the nation's energy goes into building operations and creation of building materials, and probably a higher percentage of what will be covered under Senate Bill 373. We're here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 373. The question of why we would care as architects, I think architects got into the profession of architecture because they care about creating a better world. They're not trying to destroy the world that we have. And we believe global warming is a real thing. We've heard great testimony on that today, and I won't go into those reasons. But with some leadership of some pretty visionary people in our profession, we've actually been able to clarify not only our responsibility with this, but the time that we have left to really solve this problem. And so we really desire to take some real leadership and responsibility for that. What are we doing? For our part, the national AIA has adopted a policy, some energy consumption goals for new buildings needed to halt greenhouse gas to the point where to sort of stop the increase, called the 2030 challenge. All new buildings would need to be carbon neutral by 2030, immediate energy savings of 50% over current standards, and a sort of a gradual ramping up of those goals until 2030. So this challenge has been adopted by the U.S. Conference of Mayors. It's also working its way into public policy. We're pushing it into public policies all over the country, working with the AIA, trying to get public information, research, education to both our members and our clients, and efforts to change public policy like this. Why do we support SB 373? We're not sure we can achieve our goals, and I think conserving energy is the best bet, but certainly generation of renewable energies is the next best thing, and it solves the same problem. It also keeps the money in the state. Architecture profession, we're sometimes termed the canaries in the gold mine. Because we're so sensitive, our profession is very sensitive to the economy, so a strong Oregon helps our profession. We also think that there's some interesting synergies between the buildings we design. As Dennis was talking about, his buildings will be generating as much energy as they consume. And so there's some interesting ideas about how energy policy in the future really works, because I think it may not be a simple relationship of power producers and power consumers. Why should Oregonians lead? I think Oregonians can solve the global warming, not in the amount of renewable energy that we produce, because it's sort of a drop in the bucket, but as a beta site for the real contribution of creativity and leadership. I was in China recently, and it was interesting that they're importing ideas from America, but unfortunately not the kinds of attitudes and values we have in Oregon. But that should change. We already practice nationally in sustainable design because we have the best intentioned public and private clients in the country. We have the best incentive programs from the utility companies. We have the best tax credits from our government. We have the best engineers, architects, and sustainable consultants on the planet. And we have the best examples of successful built work. And what this bill does is really add to that that sort of tool of kit, or the kit of parts, the toolkit to really make Oregon continue to be the leader in energy and design in the nation.
Thank you, Tom.
Members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Brad Zenger. I'm an entrepreneur from the high-tech marketplace. I've spent the majority of my last 15 years in Oregon as an executive during the rapid growth phases of two Oregon companies, high-tech companies, InFocus and Pixelworks. I also have recently worked with several others to start an angel investing group that's focused primarily on the sustainability marketplace in support of the Oregon business plan. The goal of this group is to get capital actually before the venture capitalists enter the equation, specifically, again, targeting the sustainable or clean tech market. What is the market opportunity? I believe, as has been said here before, that the renewable energy standard is rooted in a significant long-term business opportunity for Oregon around clean energy. As we've already heard, clean energy globally is growing quite rapidly, 39% in 2006 alone. I think the other thing that's compelling about Oregon is we've got an early adopter market, and from a marketing or a business perspective, that's really key. And this is evidenced by the fact that Oregon's investor-owned utilities rank, both of them rank in the top five in the country in consumer participation in their green power programs. Oregon has a national reputation for strong consumer support of efforts that reflect our long-term interests, including recycling, the bottle bill, green building, and many of our planning efforts. For businesses, this strong local demand is a key incentive for companies to invest and deliver the innovative solutions that are going to address this market opportunity. And as we've already heard today, Oregon has an abundance of power or compelling resources to support renewable energy. While I think this combination of factors is necessary, it's not sufficient to create a globally competitive opportunity for Oregon companies. We need to have a compelling local business case. And what is the business case? Well, I think I, along with many entrepreneurs, investors, and investors like me, support the renewable energy standard for two reasons. The law would provide a clear statement of intent around the state's long-term values and strategies. This is critical for us to attract the talent, the capital, and the technology that are necessary to build this opportunity in this industry in Oregon. I think also using these policies that reflect the long-term interests of Oregon citizens, this law will help create a significant market-driven demand beyond early adopters, which will be key to ensure that there's strong investment in the innovations that will be necessary to drive costs down. And these costs are really important as we also are faced with the increasing marginal cost of the acquisition and the use of fossil fuels. So the potential outcome, is that in addition to lower risk for Oregon citizens resulting from a more diverse, increasingly renewable sources of energy, this law is an investment in our economic future. Oregon companies, both new and existing, can leverage our strong local demand for renewable energy, significant resource base, and favorable government policies to provide globally competitive products and services to serve the rapidly growing global market for renewable energy. Oregon values and the local products and services that reflect them will become increasingly precious in the rest of the world as those citizens come to realize the value of your insight in passing renewable energy standard Senate Bill 373 into law. I and the entrepreneurs and investors of today and tomorrow ask you to make the renewable energy standard law. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very much, and thank you, the three of you, for your written testimony and for abbreviating those. Any questions? Thank you all very much.
quickly call up Mike McCarthy, Jerry Bryan, David Compton, all from a long distance away. And on deck, Jeff Hammerland. And I know there's someone from Deschutes County because I can make out the word Deschutes, but I cannot make out the name. It starts with a D, first initial. All right, you're on deck. Go ahead. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike McCarthy. I'm a farmer from Parkdale, Oregon. I raise apples, pears, cherries, cattle, hay, and some timber. And I'm here representing the Middle Fork Irrigation District in Parkdale, Oregon. I'm the chairman. I've been on the board of Middle Fork Irrigation District for 22 years. Middle Fork Irrigation District has generates 3.2 megawatts of hydropower with three powerhouses, and we have since the early 1980s. Our irrigation district irrigates about 6,000 acres in the Parkdale area. Middle Fork Irrigation District supports Senate Bill 373. Our hydroelectric project has been an extremely positive thing for the Middle Fork Irrigation District, and we support Senate Bill 373 because we would like to be able to sell additional power if we can modify or increase our efficiencies or if we were to expand our hydroelectric generation in any way. Hydroelectric has really benefited our district. It's been able to help us provide low-cost water to the farmers in the district, which has been extremely important in helping us to be competitive. We have some of the most low-cost water per acre in the state of Oregon. This has been a great thing for our pear growers. Also, we are able to provide piped, pressurized water to each farmer. And it's pressurized water is delivered to their piece of property for their use, and we don't have to do any pumping. We have no electrical use in our district because of the fact that we can deliver this pressurized water to them. We've been able to pressurize our entire system because of the revenue from our hydroelectric system, which has been a good thing for all the farmers in the district. Also, because of the revenue from our hydroelectric system, we've been able to make a big commitment to fish restoration in the basin. And one thing that's been talked about quite a bit today is the ability for us to provide very good family wage jobs to the people, our employees for our district. So that's a brief summary of why we really support Senate Bill 373, and we just want to make sure that we are able to sell any additional power we might be able to produce in our district. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Jerry Bryan with Farmers Irrigation District in Hood River. So, Senator Atkinson, members of the committee, thank you for your patience in all of this. No need to really beat this to death. Mike McCarthy from Middle Fork has made the points. The only thing I'd add, just sort of crossing the T and dotting an I, is within the umbrella or under the umbrella of sustainable behavior, this renewable hydroelectricity we've been able to put in place has allowed us to actively address within the context of agriculture issues of economy, ecology, and even social equity, jobs that were mentioned. We've been able to cultivate and further nurture partnerships with natural resource agencies, and it's really ended up being a win-win in a lot of ways. In particular, the 34 irrigation diversions we had have been reduced to 9, and all of the diversions are screened, which puts more fish in the system and also allows us to conserve water for more in-stream summer flow. So as Mike mentioned already, the possibility of continuing these projects beyond the 20 years we've been able to enjoy has extremely positive implications for agriculture. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank the senators for allowing me to address you today. My name is Dave Compton, and I'm the general manager of Middle Fork Irrigation District. No, it's been about 4 years. I've been with the district. Prior to that, I was with Sprint for 23 years. And so it was an interesting change coming from a industry into an environment where basically made up of very independent individuals. I mean, farmers as a whole are very independent in the way they look at life. But they came together with a dream and a vision to better their district, and they did that through hydropower. And so as you look at that, and as you listen to the different issues that have been brought up today, I think it's interesting to hear the different perspectives of folks coming to the table. Senate Bill 373, I think, brings many to the table that have a vision for the future of Oregon and the nation. One of the things I'm part of is the emergency management group for the county. And one of the things we talked about is the diversification of our power grid. And what does that look like? And where are the elements that reside today that can stand alone in the event of somebody coming in and disrupting our grid? And unfortunately, not everybody in the world appreciates the American way of life. We've seen that in numerous situations. So as you look at this, I think there's a component that gets overlooked, and that's the ability to diversify the American grid. And many of the small communities have that ability if given the support. And so I would encourage you to give it the support and move this bill forward. Thank you very much.
Mike, Jerry, David, thank you all. We really appreciate and know how hard it is to drive here and take a day away. So thanks for waiting and thanks for driving. Deschutes County, I'm going to call you until you tell me what your name is.
David.
Don Coates, Peter Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David McLean. I'm from Bend, Oregon, and my penmanship probably wasn't clear enough for you. I'm sorry about that. I am a renewable energy development consultant. I have, in my career, I have installed or been involved with over 1,000 megawatts of developed renewable energy projects, geothermal, wind, and biomass, throughout the western United States. So in my professional practice, I've worked on just about everything out there. And I have a very simple message. It's almost like my third grade message when I gave a lecture to a school the other day was, fossil fuels are bad, renewables are good. Now, to give you a more defined version of that is that renewable energy projects have ability to provide long-term stable price structure. The fuel structure of a renewable project is built when the project is built. For example, a geothermal project, you develop the well field at the same time you build the power plant. The wind project, the wind is right there. You're developing the power plant with the energy resource. Same with a biomass plant, a little bit different, but you're building the fuel resource into the facility. That provides an ability to levelize the price over the amortized cost of the project. So a 6.5 cent kilowatt project in 2007 with some inflation adjusters could be a 6.5 cent project in 2017. That means long-term rate stability. These projects also are very reliable. They have high capacity factors. They're there when you need them, and therefore that provides grid stability. That results in long-term stable rate structure. I think that the future, if you're going to look at the future of this state, we should be relying on new renewables rather than fossil fuel resources. RPS will stimulate a market to develop those resources, and in the long run, new renewables will keep rates low. Just like the investment in the hydro system kept rates low for 50 years. The new future should be on the new renewables, not just the hydro system, but on the new renewables. RPS would be good for Oregon's economy. It will stabilize long-term power rates. It will stimulate the development of these projects. Instead of projects in Wyoming, you'll develop them in the Northwest and in Oregon. And this will provide stable, long-term, high-paying jobs for local and mostly rural economies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Don Coates, and I would like to thank you all for taking the time to listen to us. It's going to be hard to add anything to what you've already heard today. However, I'm a grower, a wheat grower from Sherman County. I'm a fourth-generation farmer, and I guess I'd like to reiterate a few of the things that have been said today, and that's that I think this is a particularly wonderful opportunity to bridge the urban-rural divide that has kind of evolved over the past few decades. with the increased distance between folks on the urban side and their rural cousins, I think this is an opportunity to help bridge that a little bit and bring people back together again. And I think agriculture is really excited about the opportunities that avail themselves through renewable energy, not only electricity, but also the biofuel bill. We are aren't quite sure what all the opportunities are that are on the way, but we're anxious to be a part of them. And I think that Senate Bill 373 is going to provide some. I've spent the last 4 years or so trying to put together a community-based wind project, two of them, as a matter of fact. And one thing's become very clear, and that's that policy plays a huge role in making these things happen. And the provisions within Senate Bill 373 that support the community-owned projects, I think, are very important for a lot of reasons. The diversification of our energy supplies from getting away from centralized systems, is there's some advantages to that that a lot of people don't completely comprehend, but I think that it's a key to security of our country. Two of the issues that I hear repeatedly is obstacles to the passage of this legislation are cost and the loss of local control. I feel like the legislation addresses those issues both in that the cost cap is there for a worst case scenario. I don't truly believe that we'll probably have to exercise the caps, but when you look at what the large utilities have come up with, the larger, more progressive utilities have already come to the conclusion that renewables are very competitive with new sources of generation, if not cheaper. And as far as the local control, when you watch what's going on across the pond here with new coal-fired plants being put in nearly weekly in the country of China, I don't know how long you can continue with thinking that that's a local issue. We have there's legislation, climate control legislation, that is imminent, and Oregon can be a leader. I hope you can support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions from Senator Brzezinski.
No, thank you.
Thank you both for driving so far. Is Peter Solomon, I called out, is he not here? Okay. A special thanks to Jeremiah for sending me notes on who's here and who isn't here. Believe it or not, group, we've almost got through five. We're 4 minutes over, but we've almost got through. There's a handful of folks left that I know are lobbyists, and no way to discriminate against you, but I wanted to make sure that people who are unpaid citizens had a chance to get here. And this will not be our only hearing. I think we're having a hearing on Thursday also. But there's a few names here of people who I don't necessarily recognize, and I'm not sure if they can come back. And I think we can, if we go quickly, get off one more panel. Dawn Irwin? Okay. Dawn, Stephanie, P-I-E-H, Pi, please come up. Steve Weiss, Chris Crowley. Okay. Now, before all of you begin, and I know you've sat here, Ralph, Bill, Lindsay Eckelman, Jefferson Smith, can you guys, would you mind coming back on Thursday? If we get through these three and you all can come back, as people in the building around a lot, I think we will have completed a lot. I apologize.
We have a chance to get her. She's not in the building around unless she's a student. We'll never be able to come back to the Capitol again. There's a chance to get her. I can drive down again, but she just left home.
Well, you're blushing, and that's enough. I'm a softie. Okay, go.
Down to 2 minutes.
Thank you, committee members. My name is Stephanie Pine. I'm here with the Oregon Center for Christian Values. We'd like to register our support today for Senate Bill 373. Thank you for the opportunity and your patience, obviously, today. I'm going to start by reading from our holy book in the book of Genesis, Genesis 1. And I'll begin, where it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth and above the expanse of the sky.' And God saw that it was good. And God said, 'Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds.' And it was so. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth.' God saw all that he had made, and it was very good." These Bible verses compel me to testify before you today. The Oregon Center for Christian Values is a network of active Christian citizens working together to promote Christ-centered values for the common good, such as care for the poor, care for the sick, care for the hungry, and care for creation. Care for creation is why we are here today. We find spiritual communion in the words of Richard Cizik, Vice President of Governmental Affairs of the National Association of Evangelicals, when he says that climate change is real and human-induced, and it calls for action soon. And we are saying action based upon a biblical view of the world as God's world. Stewardship of God's creation here in Oregon and throughout the country is truly a Christian concern, and it is a deep concern for the Christian community. We ask that you please support this renewable energy bill. We also thank you for exercising good stewardship over the miracle of God's creation. In doing so, you are also exercising good stewardship on behalf of the poor, the sick, and the hungry, and those most adversely affected by the unsustainable use of our God-given resources. Thank you for your time and your patience today. We ask you support this bill. Thank you.
Stephanie, thank you very much. We probably had you should have had you read from Genesis at the beginning, and I'm glad you didn't read from Revelations at the end. Nicely done. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Crowley. My company is Columbia Energy Partners. We're independent developers of wind projects in the Northwest region. I'm going to speak very briefly about personal experience to try to put in context some of the wonderful things about the Senate bill. We develop both large and small wind projects. That's our focus, is wind power. We recently sold a 200-megawatt project in Arlington, Oregon, to a larger wind power company. And I have to tell you that one of the wonderful consequences of that bill is that the property owner who had that property will now, I mean, he looked at me and literally said, "My son is going to stay on the ranch as a result of this." That's a very real impact of encouraging development of renewable energy. And these people have been on that property for four or five generations, been great stewards of the land, and as these renewable projects come on, it enables them to continue in that stewardship role. So, in addition to that, obviously, the investment of $150 million in Gillum County was very significant, you can imagine, to the county. The addition of long-term jobs is another very important consideration. We also do small wind power projects, and it's interesting because some of the people have talked about the, priming the pump on consumption of renewables, and that is an important aspect of this. We were able to sell the small the large project, but so far we've been unable to conclude a small project that would supply Arlington with wind power. So we've been in the process of doing that just as long as the large project. It's really important that you continue the community focus as well in this bill, because when the wind blows in Arlington, it's going to be terrific for them to look up on the hill and realize that Arlington is also being powered by a small project, while the large project is helping to supply Portland and other population centers. I guess in closing, I'd like to say that, I'm sorry, I apologize, I live in Washington, but we have projects here in Oregon. You have wonderful programs at the Oregon Department of Energy, and you have a great climate here, and I hope with 373, you'll avoid the situation we had in Washington where we had to have an initiative to pass a renewable energy portfolio standard. Much better to do it this way with everybody around the table and have an intelligent bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And apparently now we've got testimony from all three of the left coast states. We're good. Washington, Oregon, California. Thanks for coming. Go ahead.
My name is Steve White. I represent the Northwest Energy Coalition. You can see on our letterhead, we are one of the largest organizations in the Northwest that nobody's heard of. we're not a grassroots organization. We're a coalition of other organizations. We wrote the bill and passed the initiative in Washington. Great. I agree totally. I forgot your name already. Chris. Sorry. Chris, this is a much better way to do it. Doing it through initiative is wasteful. It gets bad language. You don't make the compromises that you should make. So doing it in the legislation in the legislature here, I think, is a much better way. And I would say that from reading the bill, you've learned some lessons. That is, it's an improvement over the bill in Washington, even though we helped write it. I appreciate what you've done, especially with the small projects leading those to the Energy Trust. Washington doesn't have an Energy Trust, so they had to do some other technical things. The two points I would like to make. On a second page, I show a study of the Lawrence Berkeley Lab independent analysis. On the right side is an analysis of about a dozen states and their renewable portfolio standards, showing what it's done to rates. You can see that it's almost done nothing to rates in all those states. So we don't see any great impact. And the last point is a study that was done in another dozen states or so, again by Lawrence Berkeley Labs, showing the job impact. On the left side is a funny term, terawatts, which doesn't ring a bell with most people, but you can think of if you put a zero in by everything on the left side, those are megawatts. So 300 megawatt project is probably going to produce, you know, in a range of 300-400 jobs, depending on how well it does. So this is going to improve your jobs. It's going to not raise rates, and of course, obviously, it benefits the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, you three. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your patience. And to finish off a 5-page testimony list and almost getting through it all the way from Lane County, Lindsay Eckelman. Thanks for coming.
Mr. Vice Chair, thank you for being such a softy and for allowing me to speak today. Members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Eckelman. I'm 19 years old, and I'm a student at the University of Oregon in my second year of undergraduate study. And I'm here to present to you a youth perspective in favor of Senate Bill 373. There are two primary reasons that we are concerned with the environment and climate change. The first is clear, that we as students and the younger generation of Oregonians are the future. We are now beginning to come into the inheritance of past decades, an inheritance of environmental mistakes, of scientific discovery, and new perceptions of global climate change. Having personally lived in Oregon for 7 years after spending a decade outside of the United States, I appreciate the natural beauty of this place as unsurpassed in my former experience. My attachment to Oregon and its future is one that is shared by many I know of my own age, who, like me, have enrolled in classes to study Northwestern geology to examine our resources and environment in the academic arena. Among my generation is shared a sense of necessary stewardship. We realize the imperative to care for our resources, our environment, and our state, and know that the longer we take to act, the more damaging the repercussions of our inaction will be. And as young Oregonians, we will come to regret this inaction in our own lifetimes. The youth of Oregon care about this issue and desire to demonstrate a sense of caring and stewardship for what will soon be in our charge. The second reason that the issue of environmental stability through renewable energy is a concern of youth is the future economic implications. The development of new industry geared towards renewable resources opens a new job market for young people, for those graduating from colleges not only in this state, but around the country. New industry will mean more jobs and more openings, and the progressive development this new standard reflects will attract the best and brightest to come work and study in Oregon. We as youth are attracted to those areas of the country that embrace the future and show that it is of great importance. A renewable energy standard is a way to demonstrate to the youth nationwide that Oregon is about moving forward, and this attractiveness will encourage the best in their fields to move here. The industry generated will then allow these individuals the financial means to remain in Oregon, propelling our state forward as an example of soaring job markets and advancements, both in technology and environmental philosophy. This environmental philosophy is a huge concern of the youth in Oregon. As its future caretakers and those who will deal with the consequences of current events and standards, I urge you to act now, to implement change and do what is necessary to limit these consequences by supporting Senate Bill 373. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Lindsay, thank you very much for coming up and sharing with us.
No problem. My pleasure.
You did a great job, and I think Lindsay and Stephanie should both run for office. Liven the place up a little bit. Thank you all for your patience. We did a great job. Thank you for coming, and I will now close the committee.
And those are here for the...